I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Chair, I move we approve the accounts payable. That would be accounts payable for cycle date 7-1 through 7-5. Total amount approved, $781,248.78. Noting that the county manager has reviewed and approved such.
Second.
Items of note.
I have several items to bring to your attention. Just to update you on the status of project. Primarily, anyway, first payment is to Baseline Engineering Corp, and this is from Facilities Management and Engineering Design of the Fairgrounds RV Park Project, so $1,065.63. And we have a payment from the Treasurer's Office to Chandler Asset Management, $1,849.35, and that's for their management of our investments through the month of May 2019. Payment to Gilgore Companies. This is for Roden Bridge and District 3 shots purchase of purchase of gravel for this spot gravel program, $63,336. Payment to Gemco GMCO Corporation. This is also from Roden Bridge, and this is for the 2019 dust suppressant program. Application of Magforay, $146,958.56. Then we have distributions of our dedicated mill levies, developmental disabilities, and museum and heritage tax funds. And I have the individual numbers if you have any questions about any of them. Then we have a payment to Egeria Aggregates. This is Roden Bridge, and this is for District 1 spot gravel program, $33,166.90. Payment to Motorola Solutions from the Communications Center pool. Payment of 60% completion of installation of new E911 phone system, $232,986.32. We have a payment to McMahon & Associates. This is from our accounting department, and this is for the preliminary work done on the 2019 audit, and the work is in progress through May 2019, payment of $25,000. Had a payment to Specialized Pathology Consultants. This is from the coroner's office, and this is for an autopsy performed on May 2019 for Eubanks, $1,175. Payment to Stephen Robert Muntin, Stephen, Department of Human Services, ACPF Regional Training, is for leadership training. $4,326 for that program.
We bought $33,000 worth of gravel from Egeria Aggregates, which I assume is King Mountain, so they're mining again?
I would guess so.
Oh, yeah, they've been mining.
Yeah.
I just seen them on Facebook, so yeah.
We've had other payments this year.
They've got big piles out there, and they're selling gravel.
So I thought they were mined out, and they needed to expand their boundaries.
You know, it continues the never-ending saga.
Okay.
You know, so
I'll make sure
they were already out of their pit boundary before, and they're still mining, so we're still mining. So,
I can advise planning that there may be a violation of permit.
I'd just be curious to make sure. You know,
I've thought about.
Believe me, I wanted them to continue to produce gravel. That's all a very good thing.
I do too. I agree.
But within a permit.
Now it's a grandfather pit. That's out of bounds. It's a grandfather pit that's out of bounds.
It's an interesting situation.
It is an interesting situation. It is, I think, the grandfathering part of this part.
You need to stop us.
Okay. I'll stop us right now. Thanks, Tim.
You brought it back to me.
Any other discussion of the financials?
No. That's
okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So yesterday we had updates from the county manager, from legal, deputy county manager, planning department, and building department.
I would move that we approve consent agenda items A, B, and C.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. So we are ratifying state funding for PM10 air quality monitoring program. Do you have some information for us, Tom?
So we don't actually have an agenda communication for.
Yeah, we don't have anything on here.
I mean, I've got the state work.
Oh, you didn't get this in the.
No, there is a communication form.
It's on the second page. I think it's.
It's on page 41 of the packet. It's just not. It's right after the search and rescue.
I'm trying to get it off of the off of our website rather than the packet that was emailed to me.
Oh, got it. It's not working.
No. Well, it just brings up the only link is for the statement of work, not the actual agenda communication.
That's right. It only has the purchase order on it.
I see. Yeah, there it is in our packet, though. I believe. Maybe I'm wrong. Oh, no, I'm wrong. I'm looking at the search and rescue one.
Yeah, I don't remember Scott writing in there.
I don't think he did. I think you did it, right, Tom?
No, I didn't.
Oh.
It actually, I don't have anything in our packet for this particular item.
I thought it ought to be on your consent agenda. But
yeah, it should have been on the consent agenda. But,
I can give you a little bit of information. If you
want.
It is there. Okay, what page is that? 52. Page 52. It has the statement of work, the page with my signature, the contract reimbursement statement, and then something from the 2020 budget that I can't really tell what it is.
This really is just
okay. It just didn't have a form on it, so it's
okay. It's there.
This is just
go ahead.
Continuing the National Ambient Air Quality Standards PMTIM test or monitoring that we do on top of the courthouse, been required since 1993, and this became effective. And the requirements became effective in 1994, but this continues the agreement with the state to continue that monitoring, and the effort that we provide for that is installation of clean filters in the monitor and collection of the sample filters and sending those off to the state. And the state does the data reading for the particular for the particulate monitoring sites. So there is revenue that comes along with this, as well as that covers the cost of this program. $4,380 from the state for this PM10 contract.
And I already signed it.
And you
so
have
we're
already
just
signed,
ratifying
so
it.
The question is for ratification of Commissioner Mellon's signature, since this had to be submitted last week before we could get it on the agenda.
Madam Chair, I move we approve and ratify your signature on the continued state funding support for the PM10 air quality monitoring program.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. You guys can come on up.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Do you all know Kathy Kaiser Miller?
Yes.
Yes.
Nice to see you again, Kathy.
Good morning, Randy.
Good.
Randy, how are you?
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Well, I just thought we'd stop by and kind of give you an update. I think it's been 2 years since I came in front of the commissioners and express our gratitude for continued support for the Yaba Valley Entrepreneurship Center. I'm submitting another request for next year, and certainly here to answer any questions you have, as well as give you kind of an overview of our successes and accomplishments in the past year.
We love hearing about successes
yep.
and accomplishments.
Yeah, great. Go ahead. Dive in.
The floor is yours.
Well, I have, you know, trees for you to take a
trees.
Look at there. And I've made one for Kathy. The Entrepreneurship Center runs on a budget that's just about $100,000, of which much of that is my salary and benefits. We do pay for some rent to the building and have a few other expenses too, copy machines, so forth and so on. Of that, about $30,000 comes from rent from tenants in the 8 office incubator that we basically host small businesses for up to 3 years in that space, have a little bit of transition every year, 2 or 3 come and go. But I usually have those filled quickly. It's a popular place, and I have right now I have a short waiting list for spaces. But we do run a deficit to CMC, and CMC covers the, always has. Ever since the program was started in the late 90s, it's always had a deficit, and I'm guessing over the years CMC's probably put in, you're not going to like this number, $800,000 to $1 million of funding to maintain that organization over the 20-year history. There's been a few years where it dropped down in the old Bogue Hall, but now we have only have 8 offices, so the rent is limited in what we can collect. So we do require some community support to be successful. Right now, the last four years, or maybe five, you've donated, not donated, sponsored the center at $7,500 a year. We also get some seminar fees. I do some side training. I've done some work with the county last year. I'm hosting some supervisor seminars this fall, too, that I hope to raise some money with. And I do get some sponsorships. Startup Colorado sponsors my business plan competition. That money, much of it stays within the center. And we get money from the chamber, and that is generally, we believe, a pass-through from the city, their EDC funding grant. And we are looking to change that from $5,000 to $7,500 in the year 2020. I'm working with John Bristol to see whether we want to just go direct to the city and make that request of city council, or whether we want to continue to work through the economic development funding mechanism that they have right now. We're a partner organization of the chamber in that area. We have 9 business counselors. 2 of them are new, and we now have 2 women counselors. Both are awesome. Last year, I personally did 55 counseling sessions over the course of the year. A diverse, wide variety of entrepreneurial interests, which are highlighted in the more detailed package on the, I guess, the right side of the packet there. These are all ideas. They're not necessarily businesses. People start with an idea first, and my goal is to help them either move forward or, frankly, move backwards and climb out of that tree and realize that maybe right now is not the time to do it. So we do some helpful encouragement of unfinished ideas or bad credit or no cash to start the idea, too. So there's coaching involved in that. Our other counselors, I assume, did about 25 to 30 sessions this year, 2 a month, I would say. Variety of skill sets they offer, and I try to do the matching or date making, if you will, with those counselors to fit their expectations the best. During the year, we host and nurture a lot of community business-oriented events. In the past year, we've hosted CHAFA. Our sponsors of the Four Points funding pitch events that occur in the fall and winter, or pardon me, summer and winter. We host the Economic Summit and sponsor it at CMC. We hosted the U.S. Federal Reserve Roundtable a couple of months ago. Steamboat Rise was an entrepreneurship conference that we held last year with over 100 people attending, specifically directed to the Smart World people that are looking to maybe do something different when their time is up in next winter. And we recently hosted a Vector Bank Small Business Administration lending program that I think 14 people attended that. Other speaking arrangements, I think I was one of the first, they told me, you're one of the first dudes we have ever had here, but I talked to women in networking too. So I was kind of proud of that, frankly. Steamboat Springs Teen Council, I talked to them, and I hosted the high school business class at CMC too, so I'm trying to reach out to the folks at the high school as well. Our offices are fully rented. The details of the current tenants are listed in your more detailed information in my packet to the county. I have held 17 seminars in the past year. 6 of those are how to start a business, very basic entrepreneurial 1, 2, 3 type of stuff. Business plan workshop, which is in conjunction with our business plan competition. I've held 6 of those seminars, just completed a series, and I'll do 1 more of those in August. And 5 skill-based professional development seminars throughout the year, too, in marketing, finance, legal issues, and so forth. In 2018, our business plan competition had 11 submitted plans. The winner was Hero Club, who is also a tenant in the Entrepreneurship Center right now. They got a check for $5,000 and 3 months free rent, which they've moved on and are paying rent now. Second place was Mark Berkeley. Do you know Mark? Yeah, he's doing innovative regeneration, trying to use power from composting to power his grow facility, basically, which is micro vegetables and things like that. The plan is up for 2019. I was very pleased to get some new sponsors. We have $12,000 in prize money to offer, plus the pilot's putting up marketing assets of $2,000 to the winner, too. So the winner will get $7,000, second place will get $5,000, the winner will get these marketing assets. And again, I offer 3 months free rent to the winner if they want an office space. Some do, some don't need it. And Startup Colorado, which is a partnership of OEdit and University of Colorado, is again sponsoring the event. They see the value in this in our community. Some of that money I use to promote it in the newspaper and online, and some of it I keep for myself to run it and take advantage of my time and energy. Community-wise, I've been on the Economic Development Council forever, and I'm currently on two subcommittees of that council. I'm the longest by far the longest-serving committee member on that council. Steamboat Springs Chamber Board of Directors and past president of the Chamber Board. I serve on the Yampa Valley Airport Commission with Commissioner Monger. And I'm now beginning to serve a term as president of the Rotary Club of Steamboat Springs, effective 2 weeks ago. Other issues, I'm helping SmartWell transition team members to entrepreneurial lifestyles. I'm working with 5 people specifically, and we're going there next week to talk to another group of people. I sponsored Rouse County's participation in the Rural Jumpstart program successfully.
Got that last week, what does that mean?
Well, we're helping them think about what they want to do next and stay in the community. These are people that have identified themselves.
So kind of like what the just transition of our coal mines is going to be like, too.
Yeah, that's a bigger problem. the 15 that's to 20 people that are looking to stay here.
I'm sorry, you lost me. What was the question?
I asked him what specifically was assisting SmartWell team members in transitions.
I will tell you.
And I figured that's what it was.
Commissioner, goal is to help them with
their quality of life and living here was more important than staying
SmartWell
and the rest moving on. And so we're trying to, you're helping them try to create business opportunities or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
As is Christine at Workforce Center, we have a small team that's kind of going to be hands-on in terms of it being.
Well, that's what we were lobbying for when they decided.
And John Bristol is the driver behind this effort.
Yeah. And there only ended up being about 15 them that stayed here, right?
Although there's a few that haven't declared.
Okay.
Again, the Rural Jumpstart program was successful. We have our first company going in front of OEdit next week on the 17th, and that's Hero Club. Yes?
Refresh my memory. Exactly what is Rural Jumpstart? What does it provide?
Tax abatements. Okay. From you?
Income tax.
Income tax from the state. Property tax.
Personal property tax.
Yes. They don't have any assets, so it's this particular business is a service business. It's subscription-based hearing aid battery service.
Right.
So their assets, the cost to the county will be minimal, but they will have income tax abatement for themselves, the founders, as well as any employees they hire. So that's a nice advantage in terms of recruiting team members, and they're getting to the point now where they're going to need to hire fairly soon, I believe.
And then how long do those...
3 years, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. I attended some program that CMC is co-sponsoring called Our Community Listens in Glenwood Springs. I attended the Rotary Convention in Germany recently. And I've been an adjunct instructor in business for a very long time at CMC, too. So keep busy. I believe I serve the community in a valuable capacity.
There's like a woman. You need to get out and about a little bit.
There's a Northwest Council of Governments. The person that runs the loan fund there is familiar with all the Western Slope communities would vocally tell you that we are the most evolved, most successful entrepreneurial ecosystem in the mountain communities.
So I'm curious, I mean, it's great that the college supports that. How do you see this program? How does it benefit the college?
Well, let me just say that I've been with the college since 1995, and I remember when we started the Small Business Incubator is what it was called back then. There was a lot of controversy about that. You know, is that the mission of the college? And over the years, it has been extremely beneficial in terms of the relationship that we have as a college with our community. We are a community college, and we're here to serve the community. And a lot of the work that Randy has done has brought in a lot of opportunities, not only for our students to mingle with community members, but also members that are, you know, at large within serving our community. So we see it as being very beneficial. The only problem is that it is expensive for us to run, and that's why Randy solicits for support.
Great.
I remember being somewhere recently, and there was discussion that this is I think, the only standalone incubator that doesn't also have more of like a co-working space associated with it.
That's true. We do not have a co-work space, although currently one of my tenants is looking at bringing in someone to share his office with him because he's had a baby and frankly can't work as many hours, and I'm trying to encourage that. We're an organization that has concerns like your government for risk. So right. We have to have a liability insurance, and we have to have a contract with anybody that is putting their butts in a seat in our campus.
Yeah. I guess I was just curious whether you've had discussion about whether that model is making sense and working, because it seems that a co-working space could be an opportunity to generate revenue in a different way, and I didn't.
I think Barclay Isdale at the
Ski Locker,
he's full now. Mm-hmm. So I'm full now.
Yeah.
I have a waiting list to get into what we do, and most of the people that come to my space, several of them have come from his space, because they want a place to talk on the phone, to work with customers, to work with vendors that's a little more private.
Right.
And it's not soundproof, but it's a lot more private than sitting like this with four other people that are doing their job on their phone and on their computers. So we provide a niche that's, I think, one step up, and many of our people have come from either the house, the coffee shop, or cold workspace.
Yeah.
I will tell you, in the past, the cities have, we've had, there's two operations that, especially for the artisans, that's had that co-share environment that's been here in the past. I'm taking myself a little bit, but
yeah.
There's room for more.
I think the last one was probably about 2000 or something. There was one down here on Main Street that was a work share environment.
Yeah, there was, and there was one out by Ace Hardware for a couple of years too. It didn't survive because it probably was in the wrong location.
Yeah,
but I do believe that there's a good deal of opportunity for more co-work in this town. Somebody's been working one at the base area, but hasn't got their loan approved yet, so I would love to see more.
Yeah, I just was surprised to hear that it's unusual to have an incubator that doesn't also have a co-work space associated with it. So I was curious.
Mm-hmm. And I would just say space is at a premium.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when we look at our campus. We're on a hill, and we've got limited space in terms of what we can expand to. So I would just say that's a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure.
So I guess the only comment I have is that, I love your program. I think it's a great thing, and I think...
I love Rock County, too.
It's a mutual love affair.
I've always been one of these people that's a little bit dubious about economic development, where we say, we're going to spend X amount of money to do economic development, and it's all, sometimes it feels pretty gauzy. At least with your program, it feels like you have some real deliverables.
Mm-hmm.
You actually have some actual successes to share.
The other side of that pamphlet has a list of businesses we've nurtured over the years, and some of those were one-hour counseling sessions. Some went through the business plan competition and got the coaching that comes with that. Others had sat down with one of us for 4, 5, 6 hours of consecutive meetings. But it's a really detailed list of where our footprint is in the community. And, whether it's 10th Street haircut barbershop or some of the delis and things like that, we've had a big footprint, in my opinion, on Lincoln Avenue businesses throughout the years. And some of it is, again, 1 hour I needed to figure out how to hire an employee. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to set up a bookkeeping system. So we do that kind of niche counseling, but we've had a footprint, really, that's across the community.
Yeah, I think count me among those that believe that we'll have better luck growing our own here in the community
and recruiting
and attracting businesses in.
Amen.
Well, and the nonprofit that I am now, was not a nonprofit, but we started at CMC in the Entrepreneurship Center and expanded to two offices for a short time because we were out of space, and moved into the old hospital building and converted into a nonprofit and started with one person, and now I think there are about 8 people that are working with him. So, personal testimony. I mean, it was really important to have that below market rent for that period of time when we were getting started.
I don't think we're a lot below market, but we're a little. And I will be raising rent January 1st on people that are not on contract by $25, but I've been doing that about every 2 years now just because things do go up.
That'll break
big shot.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think, I don't know about significantly below market, but it's definitely different than what you can find anywhere else. I mean, to have the office space and then to have access to a conference room, to have a kitchen, have a copier. Yeah. I mean, it's, to be able to...
In a really bright and cheery location.
It is, yeah, not in a basement somewhere.
Yes, over there at the old hospital building, you have a dark spot.
We did a good job with it, though. We got kids in there. You gotta,
yeah, that helps.
You got to keep it happy. But... you know, I think it's unique whether the cost, you just can't find other opportunities like that, I don't think so.
But we owe it to the trustees of our college who, for many years, have supported it, including several past college-wide presidents. It's not easy to maintain it, and we understand there's a cost involved, and it really makes a big difference that organizations like yours show that, validate the benefit to the community by supporting it as much as you have.
Well, I loved your explanation of why it's good for the college.
Right. Well, and it's unique. No other campus or location at CNC has anything quite like this. Which, as Randy says, each time we get a change of leadership, they want to know, okay, why? Yeah. Why is it there? You know,
why are we spending this money?
Yeah, absolutely. And so over the years, we just keep defending it because of the relationships that we have in the community.
Will you talk about support for businesses that are outside of Steamboat?
I do get requests from every people literally across the state, and I just was giving counseling to somebody about it by a cafe in Wrangell, Alaska last week. So I have a footprint. I've gotten enough, been around long enough that SCORE sends me requests for business coaching across Western Colorado because we're the only mature SCORE counseling organization west of the Continental Divide. Okay, so... I'm going up to attend the Craig EDC meeting in 2 weeks. I have in the past, when Noreen Moore was super engaged, been very active in Hayden and Oak Creek, but I have not as of the last few years. Certainly do business counseling. I recently talked with a woman that wanted to start a consignment shop down there in Oak Creek. So my doors are open. I've had a woman that runs a cleaning service that she does the whole valley, and she's Hispanic speaking, so her son translated, came through my organization about a month ago, and you know, I helped her as best I could. She lives in Oak Creek, but she works up here, so makes most of her money up here, I should say. So, you know, my doors are open. I welcome that, and I would welcome the opportunity to talk in front of their civic groups and counsel any business startups that are considering that future.
Speaking of Noreen, I'll send you some information of a really nice piece of real estate. Just looking for some tenants. Really cheap.
Really cheap. And his wife.
My wife might be in there.
A
little bit of selfish interest there.
It is great, though.
Yeah.
It's a good spot.
Great spot for people that
are you guys
start businesses.
Educating on the enterprise zone and the investment tax credit and the rest?
No, sir. Since it, I don't know.
As not part of the business part of your plan? I mean...
I'm not familiar with it yet. So,
Steamboat just got included in the enterprise zone last year, which makes it eligible for 3% investment tax credit, state investment tax credit.
Yeah, I'm not in tune to that. So if you want to send me a link... or tell me where to find it, I'll go and read about it.
I'm sure John Bristol has got that info.
Probably. Well, AG&C monitors associated governments in Northwest Colorado is the fiscal agent for the state to implement it. You have to be pre-registered. But I would think that any time you have somebody coming in starting a new business and buying equipment, and they're going to have equipment, I mean, they would want to have the opportunity for the investment tax credit that the state provides. So I guess at agnc.org would be the best place to look for it, Randy. And, you know, and again, I'm talking about some of your littler people. I mean, it's people that are going to have their taxes done and the rest by CPAs and accountants, they're going to
They're already going to know
that. Yeah.
But people that are going to be doing their own taxes and the rest probably, that misses one of the underutilized
options.
Bennies.
Yeah, yeah.
That might be.
We don't have a lot in Colorado. You're right.
And it just happened last year?
Yep. Steamboat became included.
Okay. Nice.
There was everything else other than Steamboat in Rock County was in the enterprise zone. Steamboat just became eligible last year.
Okay.
Anyhow, just a thought.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks for all you do. We're still supportive of the program.
Yeah, I think your budget request will likely be looked upon kindly.
Or making us all go to war or something else,
you
know, or some.
Yeah.
I said likely.
Yeah, I know it's a competitive world out there. Thank you for your time.
You thank you.
Feel free to call if you have any questions.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. I saw Kelly in the hallway. So we're considering the day treatment alternative Mind Springs health contract.
With Mind Springs.
Yes. It looks like it's budgeted. There's grant funding. The position is based solely on funding availability. I have no other information.
Do you have the contract?
I do.
And is it initialed by the attorney?
Yes. I believe so.
It was.
Yeah.
You're up.
Great. Madam Chair, I would move to authorize and approve your signature on a contract with Mind Springs for core funding for the day treatment alternative case manager position. In the amount of $21,287.
Blew up.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Are we off?
Melanie?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. So we're hearing a request to write off delinquent account balances. So do you want to give us the overview here?
Yes, these are seven accounts that I have done everything in my power to contact or get a hold of. Their email or their mail is all returned to us. Most of them have gone bankrupt or are out of business. And there's a couple who just I can't get a hold of. I've even tried calling their places of business, the last two, 6 and 7, Karen and Fred Hughes and Bo Christensen. Apparently they either left town or they never existed, according to the people I've talked to at their old businesses. So we just need to get them off our aging so accounting can clear up our books. Now we do have some more. I attached an aging of everything that we had outstanding, but there are some that I'm still working on and I refuse to give up on because I have been in contact with them. But these are the seven that I've just kind of given up on. There's just no way. And if they're bankrupt, I don't think we'd ever be able to collect it anyway.
Do we not ever send people to collections when they don't pay things?
We never have.
Just as a general, no.
Yeah.
Not for the amounts that.
Yeah, you know, definitely. Just seems like when they refuse to pay.
So what was the Bo Christensen permit for?
That was that home industry out near County Road 35 where he wanted to, I think it was, make cabinets. And it was a really small parcel, and I think 35 split the two. And it was, and there was also a subdivision condition that limited the buildability, so he wanted to, you know, I think it was actually.
Is that the problem? Is that River Road? No.
Yeah, I think it was like the Sydney area.
So, speaking of which, on that property, there's still, you know, Connex boxes and stacks of stuff. And I'm going to drive by and take a look at it.
So,
Well, and then he actually bought one of those warehouses out here on Copper Ridge. And so I thought I was going to get a hold of him then. But then his building is the one that blew up.
Oh,
and burned down to the ground. So,
So the bottom line is that none of these are active. None of these permits are.
No.
And so.
Yeah, but Bo's were additional planner hours, and when he was denied by the board, he quit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And same with Karen Hughes. They were just
But they actually got their permit.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Is it still in effect?
No, it's been.
We can't get a hold of anybody. There's no website. There's no.
Because that
there's
was
no
the
operation. There's no response.
And I called her business, and they said they never had heard of her.
Never heard of her?
They didn't know.
There was
I
like
had.
A parent company or something
yeah.
that she put on the application form.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I had, instead of just the Hughes Bed and Breakfast, I went, well, check out this parent company.
Mm-hmm.
And
they, what was Heather Sterling's program for?
Snowmobile rides, I think,
yeah.
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right.
And it's just, these are all annual fees.
Did we not provide Ms. Sterling? Didn't she get a conservation easement?
Yeah. And there's a current permit there that's now there, too, that took over her permit, but it's a different permit than somebody else.
And she actually sent us a letter and expired her permit, but she still owed from the previous year, which is still on the books. So I deleted her payment or her...
rebilling.
Yeah, for 2018. I didn't bill her for that one, but she still owed, and I've tried everything. To get a hold of her and nothing. And all her, the mail comes back, so she's obviously not at the same address anymore.
Just so long as, if any of these folks come back in for another permit at a future date, by virtue of writing them off, we would be unable to then turn around and collect at that time.
I think legal's told us in the past, no.
You've written it off.
Well, that. Even then, if they brought in a new application,
you can't hold that.
Yeah.
So, Bo Christensen's business, strangely, his website is blocked by our spam filter. That seems odd.
Well, he has a page.
Are you ready?
Yeah, that's fine.
Madam Chair, I move we approve the write-off of the following accounts from our planning collection. The Infinity Oil and Gas of Wyoming for $200, Comet Ridge for $200, Pine Ridge Oil and Gas for $200, Moffitt Pipeline Corp for $200, Heather Sterling for $100, Karen and Fred Hughes for $240, and Bo Christensen for $210 and $850.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 There you go.
Thanks.
Yeah. Nice and clean.
Yes.
Good. 10 minutes. Yeah, my other two items for this afternoon were advertised at 1:30, so.
Okay.
We'll see you back.
Sounds good. We'll see you at 1:30. All right, so we are hearing a request from Alpine Mountain Ranch for an LPS major amendment. Chad, do you want to give us the background information here?
I sure will. It's actually a fairly simple application that involves the relocation of lots 60 through 63. Those are obviously unbuilt parcels in Alpine Mountain Ranch for various reasons outlined in the applicant's narrative. They selected newer, hopefully more appropriate locations for these parcels. Upon staff's review of the standards for a land preservation subdivision, found out that they were in compliance, and the recommendation, it's one of the few things I can actually offer a recommendation on, based on strict compliance with the LPS standards, and I did recommend approval of this. It remained on consent agenda with Planning Commission on June 20th, and that is what's in front of you today.
No, that's okay. Will you clarify the process for me? So you recommend approval, and the Planning Commission, it was just on their consent agenda, but we also have to review it, or not necessarily?
Well, it's...
So this is a special thing with LPS.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
That's
so
why I just want to understand
right.
how it works.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
When the board created or approved the LPS process, it was a streamlined, especially compared to our subdivision process. And, a couple of things, especially to get through Planning Commission as quickly as possible, was placing it on consent agenda. And to provide some clarity there, there was the director's recommendation based on compliance with the LPS standards. And when it comes up to this review in front of the Board of County Commissioners, you know, it can be opened up to anything, you know, master plan or the standards, whereas Planning Commission was just standards and not
But it is required to be reviewed by the board.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Just clarifying. Thank you. Go ahead, Tim.
I'm curious, with the proposed findings of fact, and then after that, the conditions that may be appropriate if conditional approval is granted. I guess the conditional approval is the five conditions.
Correct. That's at my signature block at the bottom of the staff report.
The staff report at the bottom. Other questions for Chad?
It just feels like that's I think I would have removed the word conditional and said conditions that may be appropriate if this approval is granted.
But those were more or less went along with my recommendation. Yes, if those are.
It's fine. I'm just nitpicking.
Gotcha. Okay, noted.
Any other questions for Chad?
Yeah, hang on a second.
Okay.
So they approved this on the consent agenda, just like it is on your on that.
Yes, sir.
Including those conditions.
Yes.
And the findings of fact. Other questions?
Seems pretty straightforward.
All right.
No, I'm glad.
Would you all like to say anything?
I just have one quick comment in that you all know me pretty well. And that, for me, having been at the ranch 3 years, and all the good planning, I think the land planning that was done, this was the only thing that I found that just absolutely did not fit the culture of a land preservation subdivision with a wildlife habitat. And that's why I moved forward with it. And it's imperative to us to do everything we can out there to continue to increase the usability of open space. And that I appreciate you guys taking the time and going through the process, because I know, having done this before with you, that the because it's an LPS, it goes through a little different process. So I appreciate your time and consideration. So thank you.
So your opinion is that by moving these lots, it creates a better wildlife habitat? Was that what you're referring to?
Well, it does two things. It does it allows the existing habitat, which was already approved for building envelopes, to go back to habitat.
Got it.
Okay. And it also, according to the DPW, gives us opportunities for the habitat that lives within the main body of the ranch to continue to roam a little bit more than they typically would be. So it was a win-win for all of us.
Got it.
So I have a question on the map, when it goes down to the map and the rest. So when we have there was the four... Four lot, yeah. So, what is the R3? What is?
We just needed to put numbers on them because they weren't officially plotted. So we just had to have a way of designating what the lots were.
Yeah. So you got R1, R2, and R3. What's the other?
The one with the X through it.
The X through.
That was one that we had chosen, and a homeowner wasn't particularly happy with it. So we went back to the drawing table because I wanted 100% in agreement, not 99%.
Yeah, current ownership.
Yep, current ownership.
That helps. I was a little confused with that.
Yeah,
that was. So, and we're vacating four units up on top. Isn't that correct? And we're
replacing four.
Where's
the four is over here?
Oh, the green one. Okay.
Yeah.
So these are where they currently are,
yeah.
And then these ones are
the
current proposal. Got it. And so that
this should have been, my opinion, this should have been done in the first place, because this is where our density is.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and same with this. This was a missed opportunity, in my opinion, in terms of the location with Rockledge Road and how it ties into the contingent lots.
No, and again, when this thing went through, those ones up on top were a lot more contentious anyhow. Yeah.
Yeah. And you were the only one that was alive then.
I did too.
For you.
But a big
factor. You pointed towards granting your request as best not to.
It's always good to flatter the commissioner.
He did ask me, I thought we'd have any issues. I said, not unless you say so. But yeah, let me just throw in one quick comment. You know, I've dealt with a lot of different projects to the table, and a lot of times projects get put together and off they go, and then you go, wow, I wish we hadn't done that. And it's too late because of either lot sales or difficulties getting approvals after the fact or what have you. So this really is, like Bob said, I think a win-win that you can come back in and explain, and the people within the development bought off on it too and understood.
Yeah, 100%. And this is something I can honestly say, should you choose to approve it, I'll be very proud of what took place.
And so is all this up here currently undeveloped then?
Yes.
So those are future lots?
Those are future lots. And then what else we did, while we're bragging a little bit here, is that we worked, Jamie and I worked with the Forest Service, both federal and state, to create access into those units so that they could do mastication last year. Mm-hmm. And then we wrote a grant of our own to receive funds to take that mastication down into the ranch to continue to improve the elk habitat, the moose habitat, and hopefully prevent forest fires. Yeah. But,
cool.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Do you guys have any other comments, questions? It seems pretty interesting.
Madam Chair, in the matter of the Alpine Mountain Ranch, LPS Major Amendment PL 19-120, I would move that we grant the applicant's request to relocate four of the buildable lots within the remainder parcel of the following findings of fact: that one, the proposal of the following conditions complies with the applicable guidelines of the Rouse County Zoning Regulations, Section 2 and 5 of the Subdivision Regulations, applicable guidelines of the Rouse County Master Plan, and applicable guidelines of the Sub-Area Plan. Two, the subdivision exemption as proposed is not within the spirit or intent of the Rouse County Subdivision Regulations or the state subdivision statute, and therefore may be exempted from the application of the county's subdivision regulations with the five general conditions as shown in the staff packet.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Doug,
good to see you.
All right.
Good to see you.
Good
project. Our minutetaker needs your names.
Could you state your names for the record, please?
John Vander Blumen, Bob Dapper, Jamie Curcio.
Sorry, Deanna.
Thanks very much.
Good to see you again.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Yeah. You bet. Take care, guys.
All right, we will take the applicants for the Steamboat Schools West application. Whoever's coming up to speak.
Grab a chair on the way up.
Yeah. Mike Chatter.
Hi, Mike. Nice to meet you.
I see
you,
Mike. Mike, that was good.
Good.
Hey there, you guys.
Hey, long time no see. How you doing?
Good, man. Good to see you.
How you doing? Right.
Beth,
hi.
I'm attack.
Nice to meet you, Tom.
Hi, Doug. How you doing? Good.
All right, so I'll have everyone state their names for the record. Sorry about that.
No, you're fine.
Yeah, go ahead.
Tom Patak, P-T-A-C-H.
Mike Holloran, H-O-L-L-O-R-A-N.
Brad Meeks, M-E-E-K-S.
Sherry Stoke, S-T-O-K. Don't put a name.
All right, Chad, will you give us the lay of the land here?
Thanks, you bet. Yeah, again, apologize. This was another one of Alan's applications, so filling in for him again. But, yeah, we'll definitely go over the process. The application that we received was for a statutory exemption process, you know, which is basically outside of our normal subdivision process. It does not go to the Planning Commission for their recommendation, so this is basically the only stop along the way through the approval process.
So elaborate some more on that.
Yes,
all
please.
Of that whole thing you just say. Say it again.
Okay, that as being exempt from our subdivision application, you know, it.
So why is it exempt?
Because, well, actually, I thought that this application that you had just before you for Alpine Mountain Ranch and the finding that was made kind of outlines that, you know. Actually, I'm trying to pull that one up real quick.
So let's walk through, let's save that for just a second.
Sure.
So the request is for an exemption.
Yes.
Okay, and the reason given by the applicant for that request?
Is it's in the second paragraph of their narrative.
Okay. So what I see here, and I can read it, request that Route County make a determination based upon the history of the historic separation of the parcels on the assessor records and the division of the properties by County Road 42, that two separate legally buildable parcels exist in accordance with the West, with the Steamboat School's West plat map. So the request is on the basis of historic separation of the parcels. Do I understand that correctly?
That's what the applicant requested.
Okay. Thank you.
And that's why it could qualify. That's why it could qualify for the exemption process.
Yes.
Okay.
So why don't we do that on lot line adjustments? This is basically a lot line adjustment.
Well, it's a little more than that, and I think lot line adjustments could get us there, but there's a division of land for public purpose in our regulations that would have been a little closer to, you know, one of our stated processes.
But we're not dividing. These are already divided.
So, yeah, well, can we go back to that part? Can you just walk us through what's actually being requested? So I understand that what's formally being requested is an exemption, but I read the full packet, and I'm still a little unclear on exactly what is happening
okay.
here. So can you just
walk
through that?
I'll try and give you a brief history. I drive past the site every day when I go home. Notice that there was a sign on the abutting property referred to as the Shales and Libby parcel. It was a for sale sign. We contacted the listing agent because staff had some concerns about the buildability of it and the parcel in this application that's on the west side of County Route 42. Staff had done hours of research at that time and received information from the listing agent, and we still hadn't come to a conclusion of its buildable status. So when...
And that parcel is not any
is not,
of the ones
not
in question.
Part of this. We
okay.
reached out to them several times over the years. And
got it.
Had not
well, in
received.
Fact, it has now sold anyhow.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so not only did we reach out to the listing agent, we reached out multiple times to the new owners and were basically ignored up until recently. So, but with just the goal of trying to clarify the history, because we had determined that there were some, since 1972, since the adoption of our subdivision regulations, some minor land exchanges between the, at that time, Selby's and the Barbers. So.
The Selby's being the property that you're referring
that's
to.
Now
and then the Barbers
Shales.
Being the one here.
Yes,
okay.
Correct. So the first thought was the division land for public purpose because the end goal is school site. But I had some concerns because based on the research that we had done.
So hold on. I feel like you skipped a step where what are they trying to accomplish here?
They're trying to accomplish the legal conforming status or actually not conforming.
Or certify.
Because they're less than 35. Right. The board's approval that these are buildable lots.
Again, these being on this map?
The red one
the
green
red
one.
Correct.
Okay, so the red is one and the green is one.
Yes. And those are both reflected in the plat. That
and that's the current makeup of the lots?
Well, that's where it gets kind of sketchy because...
I mean,
based
from
on
the
history.
The legal stat. I'm not talking about the history. I'm talking about what is on the books in terms of what these plots look like.
Yes. And if, jump in anytime.
Well,
you
okay. If I could jump in a little bit here.
Yes.
Okay.
Please do.
So to answer your question,
I remain confused.
On the books currently.
Yes.
Oh, that's fine. You're not alone.
Okay.
Yeah,
this is,
that's why we're here.
That's why we're here.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So what's currently on the books with in regard to the Barber parcels are two parcel numbers. One parcel number is
on the assessor's office.
With the assessor's office.
Okay.
One parcel number is this parcel, and it actually goes off of this. It's on another sheet that I've got here.
The green one.
The green one, yes. Well, kind of the green one. Well, yeah, on this map, the green one. So it comes over here.
Okay.
On the assessor's records, it's listed as a little over 9 acres. Actual survey, it's about 8.5 acres. The second parcel is actually comprised, the second parcel number is actually comprised of 3 pieces of land. It's about 0.7 acres over here on this side of 42. It's about 21 acres over here, main parcel, and it's a little over 4 acres, almost 5 acres down by the river on the south side of 40. Again, the assessor's records have this at like 31 point some acres. The surveyed amount is 26 point some odd acres, somewhere along those lines. What the request is under the subdivision is to take this parcel and this little sliver on the side of 42 and designate that one lot. Lot number one or two, I don't remember what it is. With the existing house on it. To take this parcel and the parcel on the river and designate that as the other lot.
And why? What's the purpose of this?
Well, and I don't think that matters to us. That's why I have a problem of having this discussion about because of public purpose. Right now, we have a contract. They have a contract.
But if the contract goes through,
we then have created another thing, a problem for somebody else down the road. That's why I'm asking why we didn't just go through a lot line adjustment on this.
Because it,
we already do. In fact, I think Mr. Pat just referred to the fact that we already have 2 separate parcels. This is a separate parcel. It's probably a legal buildable parcel, and this parcel here with the thing, with this part of it, as well as the house, is a legal buildable unit right now.
No. And these are
We never came to that conclusion. That the applicant never provided us with that information, and based off the research that staff did, we never came to that conclusion either.
Okay.
And one of the criteria for a lot line adjustment is they have to be buildable parcels.
Yeah, the determination was never, it was never, that nobody was able to determine based on the historical record
that it was done before 72 or it was done.
So it was done before 72. The 9 acre parcel at one point in the 50s was a 3 or 4 acre parcel. And so I tried to track it back through, and you can't. You can't find it. You can't see how the whole thing fits. And that's why
so that's part of the switching and land swaps that happened between the Barbers and the Selbys.
Over the years since the 50s.
So isn't that that lot, isn't it kind of a moot point as to whether or not it's buildable given the fact that there's a house on it right now?
Not necessarily. I mean, I would say yes if we would have approved building permits after any of those exchanges would have taken place, but that all appears to be prior to some of these.
So as it stands now, if this person wanted to tear that house down and build a new house on that parcel, they wouldn't be able to get a building permit.
We have a flag as unbuildable, or at least investigation needs to be done.
And then the other question I have, the red parcel, the larger red parcel here, that's proposed for a school site, correct?
This will all be
A school could fit on that site, but I think what we're looking at is on the where the green area is, the area that we currently own. Right now, the lower area.
So the school district owns this.
The school district already owns this.
And so the school district is trying to purchase this.
Correct. The green and the red. Yep.
And the purpose of that is that you'd like to make this be a buildable site so that that property can be sold.
Sold
to somebody and get a house.
It could be sold. It could be used for a school down the road. It could be,
So I think I'm starting to understand what's happening.
We've been at it a year, Doug. I'm sure you are.
I'm struggling with why the green and the red are separate parcels.
And you say
that got separated in the 50s, then, Mike?
Well, these two different.
Pretty
this one parcel there, and that parcel there,
yeah. But no, this piece, there's a piece here that was, I think, 5 or 7 acres was done in the 50s.
With the home on it.
Pardon?
With the home on it.
Right. Well, I'm not sure when the home went on it.
40s.
It doesn't say over
it.
In the 40s?
Our stuff packet says 40s. I don't know.
Okay.
So that must have been the research you guys did.
So this wasn't purchased with this?
Okay. All of this was, including Selby's, was all my grandparents.
Uh-huh.
They gave part of it to my uncle, and then my mom got it. And that's how we ended up.
So I guess I'm still a little unclear on why we're considering an exemption to the subdivision regulations. One at all. I'm not sure why this is exempt, but also if the school district is planning to purchase this, then there's a clear exemption, right, for public purpose.
But they're not planning on building a school on this. They're planning on selling it.
Well, they're not planning on doing anything with it right now.
But they don't have a plan for it.
But if we approve this, this becomes a buildable lot that is not a buildable parcel right now.
But I'm still unclear on why it's exempt from the parcel.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do I have that right, though?
Okay.
By virtue, if we approve this, we're creating a new buildable lot that would not otherwise qualify to be so.
And you're eliminating a buildable lot.
What we're really doing is we're certifying that this one is a buildable lot, and then he says it's not right now, a legal buildable lot.
We don't know. We can't determine it as a problem. The school district owns two pieces here. As part of this deal, this becomes one, and we pick up one over there. It's really what happens. You understand?
And all of that is happening in this one application? Is that right?
Well, in the narrative, what's it on the last page of the narrative when it talks about consolidating the two western parcels?
The district has agreed to consolidate these two. So basically, you end up with the same number of buildable lots as you had before.
Okay.
This was two.
Right
now. That was two.
And condition.
And you're going to make one of them go away.
We've agreed that that will be one parcel.
Condition number two under general conditions.
But the school district doesn't currently own any of this property.
Correct.
So how can we have a condition of approval to the school district when none of this is in conjunction with the school district?
Conditional on closing.
On closing.
That's how we would do that.
Got it. Okay.
On closing. Eric's sitting over here.
Do you want to weigh in on any of this? I feel really messy, and I don't want to do anything we shouldn't do.
Well, again, in the fairness of the situation, it is messy, but, it's not our cause. It's not Stokes' cause either. I mean, it's all how life happens out here in the Wild West.
I'd just like to ask one more question. So you stated, Tom, that currently this and this and this are listed as one parcel.
That is correct.
Okay.
And the request is to have this be one.
So that's why I was saying it might be
yes. That plus was on the other side of the road as well.
So my next question is then for Chad, is that on this existing parcel, as it stands today, is this a buildable lot?
I believe so. I mean, most of our focus was on the parcel that contains the house. So, and we didn't get anything from the applicant that was conclusive on the other side. So
you believe there are already two buildable lots, but that hasn't been confirmed?
No, possibly just one, the red one. But we didn't go, let me answer Doug's question. Maybe I can just set these aside. We didn't go with the lot line adjustment because it wasn't proven that the house parcel was buildable. That's a deal breaker for the lot line adjustment process. We didn't use the division of land for public purpose because one or both of them may not be public purpose at the end of the day.
Right. Yeah, theoretically.
Because that would have been a condition of approval that they would have been, those two sites would have been public purpose only.
Because building a house here would not represent a public purpose.
Yes. And the exemption portion comes in, and Eric, weigh in on this too, is that In the AF zone district, there is no zone district, no zone change proposed. It's all AF 35-acre minimum lot size. That the resulting lots would be non-conforming. You know, would not comply
so
with
our
standards.
If we are going to approve this, we have to exempt it because it doesn't conform to our standards. Is that correct?
Because we're creating lots that don't
that
have the minimum
small.
Lot
yeah.
size.
Right.
Okay.
But practically speaking, the argument from the applicants would be, well, this has historically been treated as a lot that has a house on it, that practically speaking, one might construe that this had been, this lot was created pre-1972 zoning regulations, and that this lot kind of existed in a pre-1972 configuration. So if there was, if we could clearly demonstrate that these in fact were lots prior to 1972, they would be buildable.
But we have not been able to.
But we have not been able to clearly demonstrate that that's the
case. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, back even before this application was turned in, you know, I assigned this case to the planner and said, hey, get with GIS. And at this point in time, it was this shape. At this point in time, the house parcel was this shape. And it was inconclusive. We couldn't. The records were so bad. You know, I've been doing this 27 years, these land disputes and subdivisions. I've never seen a mess like this.
And furthermore, practically.
Makes you feel good.
And furthermore, practically speaking, if what I previously said was true, that these were kind of treated as individual lots, even if we can't actually prove it, it would have allowed for two houses to be built. And at the end of the day here today, we're going to end up with a situation where two houses can be built. Okay.
Eric, would you offer us any thoughts on this?
I'd be remiss if I didn't start with my primary concern, and that would be having a clean record.
Yes.
A lot of talking over one another here, and I'm particularly concerned about this application because of the potential for some liability here. Two parcels are being disacknowledged of being buildable. That's one of the conditions. So can't really condition of parcels that aren't part of this project, but it's being recognized in the conditions that there are two parcels identified as maybe unbuildable. So I'm concerned about what those property owners may have to say about this process, so I'd like to have a clean record.
Where's the second one?
Chad?
On the, let's call them the Selby parcels, there's the one with the white house up at the top on the green.
Yeah, the Selby house, yeah.
There's actually two. You see the line that goes in between these? Uh-huh. There's the pond parcel and the White House parcel.
So by virtue of doing this, we're saying that these are unbuildable?
Well, the pond parcel was actually created through, you know, a county process as an unbuildable parcel. So I'm not as concerned as that one. Yeah, I don't know if Eric had that background. But it's mainly the parcel that the house, that the White House sits on.
Which house? Point.
But so, Eric, you're saying
so
that
why
that's
we
not
acknowledge it now? Why should that even be included in here in part of the finding and fact that
we had spoken with Eric a couple of times on this because there have been times in the past where the county has approved subdivisions without looking around the subdivision boundary to see if it created what I'll call it an orphan parcel.
Yep.
Something non-conforming. And it was just a way of taking in making the attempt of not acknowledging that by default we created a legal orphan parcel.
So again, my first point was simply trying to say that we have a clean record here because I'm concerned about it. We're not establishing that there are any lots that are unbuildable.
Okay.
It's just by virtue of this process, we're saying this process alone is not creating buildable lots that would otherwise be unbuildable. So it's a little bit confusing, but the concern was a few weeks ago, could these property owners come up and come back in the future and say, by virtue of this process alone, and the subdivision exemption, that necessarily made their parcels buildable. We're not doing that. In fact, we're recognizing that this process isn't creating that situation.
That we believe that these lots, if we were to approve this, that it's in part because we believe that these two lots were already buildable.
We're saying we're not considering those parcels
at all, that at all.
Okay.
Either buildable or unbuildable.
Okay.
Other than the fact, I mean, if these
Wait,
guys...
Let Eric finish. One at a time.
Okay, so if that's not clear, I'll try one more time. Sorry about that. Simply saying that this process is not confirming their status as buildable or unbuildable
okay.
at this time.
So there's no...
No impact whatsoever on those
okay.
parcels. And then I thought you, between Doug's answer and Commissioner Corrigan's follow-up, I think you answered your own questions, because what this is doing is creating parcels that would otherwise be illegal subdivisions except for this process. Plucking it out of the definition of subdivision is a way around that. The legislature has given the local authority the ability to do that. And you asked a good question, well why? What standard or what basis do we have to create that now exception? Exemption is sometimes confused with, I think, exception. I think of it more as an exception to the definition of subdivision. And I think the answer here, as Commissioner Corrigan pointed out, is the historic use and recognition of these parcels as separate parcels. It's that historic recognition, and I saw the packet by the Rock County Assessor's Office in particular, that may give you the authority to exempt it from the definition of subdivision.
I have one more question. Why do we care whether or not the school district closes on this property?
Why? Because we're, I'll answer that myself, because we're getting out of the deal this combination right here in exchange for an acknowledging that they're going to have two local lots right there.
But
so they're making...
It feels to me like it's a side issue.
But Eric just told us that we are not confirming that these are two buildable lots by virtue of this. Am I...
I don't know. Is she pointing to the ones we chatted about?
The ones that are part of this application, the two lots that are part of this application.
So, yeah, we are confirming that the red one is going to be a separate buildable parcel.
Except that Eric would caution us to not use that language and just say we're just acknowledging that these should be two separate, distinct lots. It's up to somebody else to decide in a future date whether or not they're buildable.
Now, my reference to the buildability of the two lots that are not subject to this application are the Shelby's and Libby.
Shale's
and Libby.
These ones.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. So these are buildable,
yes.
And it's okay for us to say that.
Whether you say that.
We are not saying it.
I think by virtue of granting the exemption, that's what what's
that's that is what we're saying. Okay, I misunderstood what you were referring to. Thank you.
So now that's created another question. What is it that the school district owns this?
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
And
this.
That's the lead parcel is what the school.
The school doesn't own any of this.
Okay.
Is that correct?
So I don't even know why is it that we're even talking about these two?
Because that the one with the house on it, like. The parcel to the north with the house on it, there were some, appears to be land exchanges in the past, which may, you know, result
in But we're really not weighing in on
process.
Anything related to this today.
But that's where that condition of approval comes in, that I wanted to make sure that by, if you approve this today, that it doesn't, by default, give that a legal statement.
In essence, you're saying in this finding of fact number two that we're not saying anything about this. I mean, it kind of begs the question
right.
why we're even acknowledging anything about it. You're just playing it safe.
Yes.
By putting that in there.
Okay, now I understand.
That's what he was doing.
Okay. So the school district owns these.
Yeah.
Yes.
The school district plans to purchase this.
This.
All
and
of it.
The green and the red.
Green
oh,
and the
okay.
red. Yes. And I don't want to add any more confusion to this, but since you brought it up, the two parcels that the school district owns now on the west side there, each one is less than 35 acres,
right.
And those are part of the confusion over are they buildable or not. But the condition that the school district brought to the table that if this is approved, they'll merge those two
these two.
Yeah, so it creates a conforming situation on those two pieces they own right now.
So I have to assume, though, that this condition needs to say, this general condition number two needs to say something about upon closing, because
I'm still struggling. Why do we care? I mean, basically, this property, this school district currently.
What happens if the deal doesn't go through with the school? We've created an additional building parcel out there.
Thank
you. You still have two here for the school.
No, they don't have two here.
Yeah,
they don't have 70 acres.
Yeah, they've got
it's not 70 acres. Each one of those is less than 35.
So there's two buildable lots. They're both less than 35.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
Now, this one is 26, and then where the house sits is about 9.
So, that's what we're trending. I don't know. We're just trying to. Do we need to tie it back into the closing of the school? If the school doesn't close on it, and somebody else buys it, or something else happens. Do we want to prove it today? And then we have four lots out there, plus the other one that's already there, the house on the White House, too.
So my feeling is that that's kind of a side issue. I mean, is it necessary to ask the school district to guarantee that there'll never be more than one house on this property as some form of leverage so that we would approve this subdivision exemption? I kind of feel like this application stands on its own for these two parcels because they're historically long existing parcels that under any normal set of circumstances would have each been buildable lots.
I guess being the historian out there a little bit, along sharing, but those have been used conjunctively. They've been owned conjunctively by the same, Pat and Mary, all the whole time. I mean, they were separately platted parcels, but they were, one could say, well, they should have been merged in the first place. They were really one parcel there anyhow.
But if they were separately platted parcels pre-1972.
That's what they can't find out.
But we've always paid separate taxes.
Right.
Okay.
I don't know. It would be nice if we had a clearer history on all this. But so are we fine just to grant the subdivision exemption approval and going on? I mean, this is not the first of one of these in the Wild West that I talked about that we're going to see. I mean,
I would just go back to what I said before. My feeling is that, practically speaking, there were always a place that a house could have been built here, a house that could have been built here, and two houses that could have been built here. Do we really need the school district to promise us that they'll only build one house here in order to approve what practically
is? So you're asking, so you need to answer your question.
Can I weigh in again?
Absolutely.
Yes, please do.
First of all, I want to clarify, these lots were never platted, and that's an important piece to the record because that is what allows the merger of title to occur. And it's the merger of the parcels is what guarantees what it is I think you're concerned about, the density. No one has used that word yet, I realize, but that's what our master plan talks about, increasing or decreasing density. And I invite Mr. Hollerman to chime in here. I think he was the one that crafted this condition, is my suspicion, and it's to alleviate that concern about increased density. So what is being required here is that merger. That's the condition.
In order to ensure there's not an increase in density.
Of what's currently existing, arguably.
Okay.
It's a mess.
Yes.
I guess one of my concerns is if we make this conditional upon the school district purchasing this property and the purchase doesn't go through, we still have the same problem we have.
No, I totally agree. That's why I was asking the question. I mean, even if the bond issue doesn't go through, does that mean that they're not going to move forward with the thing?
And then somebody's going to have to come back in here at a future date and ask for the same thing.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you. That's why we need to have the conversation.
So really what we're considering is an exemption to the subdivision regulations, which would allow these to be considered as two separate parcels. Is that the correct word?
Yep.
Okay.
And then the question is, are we willing to approve these two separate parcels, not contingent upon what happens over here? I feel
satisfied that the question about historical use here is, would that be a valid reason to have the exemption? And I'm inclined to agree with you that we don't want to get this tied up in the school district's purchase of this property, and that I'm not particularly concerned about it from a density standpoint. What do you think, Doug?
I think we should have allowed the city to have done this.
Which of us going to go back and do an annexation? It's a smooth process.
All right, let's back up. Okay. I'm sorry. We haven't.
A little white slate here. Yeah. So I'm fine with taking out the mandate. I think we have some of these things out there. So I'm fine taking out the condition. I guess we need to understand, though, that we are granting them an exemption for something else to happen out there on that other. We're going to redraw the lot lines. We're going to definitely create two buildable lots out there. One has a house on it. One does not have a house on. We're going to acknowledge that through the actions that we're taking today. And I'm acceptable.
We're running the risk that by virtue of not making the purchase conditional on this, that we could end up with four buildable lots out there instead of three.
And, you know, who knows what might happen in the future for the Rob County, and we're going through a master plan and the rest. We could be creating a new density zone around the city, too. You know, back when those lots were done, you remember that we had an easy exemption process in the 1980s all the way through till 1995 for 15 acres or less. Mm-hmm. The minimum lot size was... It was 35, but in Mike,
sure.
It was a 50. You could go through
a
very easy process, and the minimum building lot size was 15. So,
in short, you're not concerned.
No, I'm not.
Things change.
No,
got it.
So, in which case, then, if we're all in agreement.
Hold on. There are a bunch of people sitting out here, and I want to make sure that none of them are waiting to make public comment.
Okay.
If they are, we should take that before we make any decisions here.
Okay.
And then I'm also aware of the fact that we have not really allowed the applicant to say anything. So I want to just back up a couple steps, give everyone an opportunity to speak before we do that. I don't know if you guys have anything else that you feel needs to be added.
I like the way it's running right now. We're good.
Okay. Thank you. And is there anyone in the audience who'd like to make public comment? Okay. Thank you very much. All right. You may carry on.
So I'm just going to make the point then that now that we've determined that we're not going to make the purchase of the property by the school district, make this approval contingent upon that purchase, then the findings of fact and the conditions as shown in the packet work the way they are.
I think we removed the second condition of approval because that's the merger of the school district parcels. And I think unless there's a reference to the purchase of the property by the school district, I don't know how we can require the school district to merge adjacent parcels via this.
I agree with you.
Okay. Yeah. Does that make sense? Okay. Is that okay?
Well, sorry to interrupt you.
You're okay.
The approval.
Keep us from getting in trouble. You say whatever you need to say.
Well, I'm not sure what tack you're taking here, but you can't condition this approval on the merger, meaning that this approval isn't final until the merger occurs. Now, I understand that it is not known yet if the school district will purchase the properties or not. And you can't do that, in my opinion.
Without the purchase being a part of it?
Which means that if the purchase doesn't occur, the merger doesn't occur, then the approval is
And I think that's what we want.
We've taken that off the table now.
And I understand.
Yes.
That's your tack.
I think that we would like to avoid the approval being invalid because of this condition and having to have this conversation again in the future.
I like that.
Yeah. Did I reflect that?
Well, I mean, now that I'm thinking about it.
there you go. Thank you again.
And you need a drink of water.
The way this is written, it all works even if the purchase doesn't go through. You guys currently own this?
Yeah.
The school district.
Yes.
So you could theoretically merge these without purchasing this property.
Yeah.
Well, then we knew that anyhow. They could merge it. Yeah, they could have merged it.
No, but I think I'm backtracking on what I said earlier. I was concerned about approving this the way it's written here and then having the purchase and possibly adding a condition about the purchase. We don't need it. We don't need to add that condition. We could approve it the way it's written right now, and we are forcing them to merge this.
But we're not forcing them to do anything.
We're going to take out number two. That's what
I believe we should take out because I think this circles back to your question about what do we care if they merge this. So let's say the school district is not going to purchase this property, theoretically. What incentive do they have to merge this so that the subdivision exemption has been approved?
We're betting on the backwards, to be fair, to the school district.
When I was originally talking about it, I was going to make a condition, have this conditional upon the school district buying it, but that doesn't, if they don't buy it, the problem still exists.
Correct.
And I think we've all
and if they don't merge this, the problem still exists.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we're in agreement. Any other comments?
I don't. I'm hoping that Doug
I think
can do a good motion here. I guess the comment I would make, and I know Eric is anxious to make sure that we have provided a good reason, a good record for approving this, and that, as I understand it, is that we believe that historically these were used separately and were only should have been buildable had everything gotten not lost in the paperwork through the years. We're not creating something out of whole cloth here. We're recognizing facts that are upon the ground.
And again, I think Sherry alluded to that as well, and the fact that there were two separate property tax bills being issued forever and ever.
I would propose that the most appropriate thing to do would be to actually include the reason that we're exempting it in our findings of fact, which would be that historical use.
You would propose a third finding of fact?
No, just under general condition number one, where we state, under finding of fact number one, where we say that we are exempting it from the subdivision regulations, that we state why.
Due to the historical use and configuration of the property?
Yes, I would propose that would be.
Okay.
Is there anything that you would like us to put on the record that we've...
I think we have the record. Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve this subdivision exemption request with the conditions that we're going to go through, and it's going to be that we have determined that the subdivision exemption is proposed. Well, it's going to be part of the finding, never mind. But I move that we approve this subdivision exemption, and I move that that would be included in the findings of fact that the subdivision exemption as proposed is not the spirit and intent of the Rock County subdivision regulations or state subdivision statute, and therefore may be exempted from the application of the county subdivision regulations. Finding the fact number two would be inserted in there that this subdivision exemption is approved based on the historic use and
configuration
of the property. All right?
Yes, we want to include that in finding of fact one, or you're proposing
that's number two.
Number
two. And then the three will be as written as number two. The approval of this application does not acknowledge the legal status
or buildability of the parcels owned by Patrick John Libby and Kimberly Giselle Shales that have a parcel identification numbers. You'll have them in the record, 22004 and 31004. Following condition, these disapprovals, subject to the following conditions, plat for the subdivision exemption shall be finalized and recorded within 6 months of the Board of County Commissioners' approval. Extensions of up to 1 year may be approved administratively. Condition number two is mentioned in the... Oh, we're going to take that out. Never mind. That's just one condition.
Second.
Other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wait to hear the second one.
Say what?
For the second one. There are two requests. Tom, you want to start with
so
that?
Is this this request?
Well, so the second request is...
We saw that in the letter.
Yeah.
And then, we're not going to consider that today.
We have an agenda.
We don't have...
You haven't agendized the...
I still have some... I saw the request.
Yeah.
In fact, we're having some discussions about another parcel. And I guess you...
What is going on with the second request within your department?
Yeah, Alan had the update on that one. I don't know if you...
Okay.
Well, okay.
So I think it will be agendized at a separate time. We shouldn't... No, we shouldn't discuss it.
Okay. I guess the question is that it is a land use issue.
I don't even know what the request is.
Okay.
I think we probably should.
The request is to donate that or sell part of our road parcel.
Oh.
To...
I really am going to say we shouldn't talk about this right now.
Yeah, I agree.
That'll have to be separately agendized as part of the platting process, I would suggest.
Okay, heard that.
Hopefully.
Because
we can get information. Yeah. You all can get information from Alan on where that is in the process and when that will be scheduled.
Yes.
And we shouldn't discuss it before it's scheduled.
Sure.
All right.
Understood.
Don't
do it.
Come on, let me discuss.
All right. Thank you all.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Thank you.
Can't wait to hear it again.
You'll like this one.